Roky Sasaki made his Dodgers debut yesterday, and yeah, I see why everybody wanted to sign that guy. Yes, welcome on in to a special episode of First Pitch, episode 150 of the podcast. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on Twitter. We're going to get to our division previews. Cincinnati Reds are on tap today. We're going to get to Around the Horn going away. We're going to get to a wild college baseball inning. And we're going to get to Devin Williams making his debut. But first, Roky Sasaki had his first Cactus League appearance on Tuesday night. And holy cow, yeah, I get it. I see why everybody wanted to sign that guy, Troy. Three scoreless innings, pair of hits, one walk, five strikeouts. He was pitching in relief. Yoshinobu Yamamoto had four innings of two-run ball to open the game. Sasaki got three after him. He's reportedly, Sasaki is going to start next Tuesday. Believe it or not, that is the Dodgers' finale in spring, because then they will be heading off to Tokyo for March 18th and 19th, the Tokyo series. Yamamoto is the starter for game one. Sasaki is expected to be the starter for game two in Japan, believe it or not. But what Sasaki did yesterday, fastball, first one was at 99 miles an hour. He averaged 98 on it. The splitter was just absolutely filthy. 46 pitches, 26 for strikes. Seven of the eight whiffs came on the splitter. So, was it kind of, it almost looked like there was two different splitters, right? Like there was a kind of a true splitter, but there was also one like a hard tumbling kind of changeup kind of thing. Is if Roky Sasaki's just throwing a fastball and then I guess two versions of a splitter with a slider that's a work in progress, and he's made two spring starts, is he ready to start game two of the regular season for the Dodgers?
I don't think so. I mean, the potential is certainly there. And like you said, I can see why all the teams wanted to sign him with what he showed with his pitches and whatnot in last night's outing. But at the same time, I think that people still have much too high expectations for Roky Sasaki, who, as you know, and as I want to remind everyone out there in listener land, that he is still 22 years old, and this is his first season in Major League Baseball. He should still be considered a prospect. And then when you look at the batters that he faced in his outing last night, most of them are not really Major League caliber guys on contending teams outside of Ellie De La Cruz and Christian Encarnacion Strand. And he gave up a double to run DLC, and then he walked Christian Encarnacion Strand. Everybody else he got out by, except he hit one batter, but he got just about everyone else out in that outing. So while it is impressive and the pitches that he has are impressive, I think that the expectations for at least this season still need to be tempered a little bit, especially after the outing last night, because the two major league caliber players who can be productive pieces of contending teams, he gave up hits to. And yes, it's a small sample size on both sides of the argument, but it's a lot of excitement around a guy who we don't know what he's going to do in a full season of Major League Baseball.
Yeah. Austin Wins got the single. Matt McClain struck out. So I do think Matt McClain's quality MLB player, but yeah, it's a very small sample. He had velocity issues last year. There was questions about a possible injury. I do think that he may be electric. I do think he's going to take his lumps. Absolutely going to take his lumps. And I do think that counting on him to be a full season guy for LA is probably a bad idea. I feel like we've seen so many of these international pitchers, whether it's Yamamoto last year, whether it was Kodai Senga, we've seen so many of them have injuries early as they're trying to adjust to a different baseball in a different country and a different workload, right? I mean, they pitch once a week in Japan. You pitch every 5 days here. And as much as teams try to stretch that out and give them a, you know, do them every 6 days instead of every five or give them extra rest here and there, it's a longer season. It's a higher workload. And it's a baseball that is arguably harder to throw. The balls over in Asia are a little bit more tacky, a little bit more grip. And so like, I'm excited about how electric he looked. I'm also trying to be realistic and cautious that because he looked good in spring against, you know, Matt McClain and Stuart Fairchild doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be as good in the regular season when he's facing Kyle Tucker in game two, right? So trying to be mindful there, but it's very exciting and you absolutely see why, you know, people, everybody wanted to sign him. Over under, I didn't prompt you on this. Sorry about that. Over under 110 innings for Roki Sasaki this year.
Ooh, I actually think he'll go over. I think he's going to get, I don't think he's going to go far over 110 innings. I think he's going to be in the more 120 to 130 range, but 110 is a good number. That's a good number to set it at, but I do think he's going to go over a little bit.
Yeah, his last three seasons in Japan with Chiba Latte, 129 and a third in 22, 91 in 23, and 111 in 24. And it was 20 starts, 15 starts, 18 starts. So I do think that's okay. The target is probably 18 to 20 starts this year. If you can get that out of him, let's see what happens. Let's see how healthy he is. A guy who looks fully healthy and is already starting to grow the beard back, Devin Williams of the New York Yankees. He appeared in a game for the first time for the Yankees on Tuesday. They faced the Phillies. Your Phillies beat them 12-3.
Don't remember.
So kind of gross there, right? But 12-pitch inning for Devin Williams. He used that airbender to great effect. He got a ground out of Alec Boehm. Kyle Schwarber singled. He threw nothing. He threw five airbenders to JT Realmuto, who struck out swinging, and then Max Kepler kind of fouled out. The pitch is obviously awesome. It's incredibly unique. That's why it has its own name. Aaron Boone's comments afterwards were about how unique it was. But how frustrating do you think it has to be for Brewers fans where everybody's acting like this is a new thing they've never seen before when Devin Williams spent 5 years in Milwaukee in their bullpen being one of the best relievers in baseball?
Yeah, I think it just goes to show you how drastically different in size the markets are between Milwaukee and New York and just how much the nation as a whole cares more about the New York Yankees than the Milwaukee Brewers. And I hate to say that because the Milwaukee Brewers are a good team and they have been a good team for some time now and they're a fun team to watch. And I mean, it's Wednesday and we haven't even gotten to them in our NL Central preview yet. So that shows you what we think about them. So it's gotta be pretty frustrating, man, because Devin Williams, you know, he's been doing it for years, like you said, and he's been doing it well for years. And it's just another instance of that Milwaukee Brewers pitching factory developing a guy, whether it be a starter or a reliever, for the Yankees to come in and pilfer the farm system. And
just
and,
like Corbin Burnes went to the Orioles, baby. Like, yep. Same kind of situation here.
Yeah.
It's not even necessarily, I think, market size, because when Ohtani went from the Angels to the Dodgers, everybody was acting like he was brand new to LA. It's like he's been playing in LA for 5 years.
That's true.
He just wasn't with the Dodgers. He was with a terribly run franchise in the Angels. I want to get to the starting pitchers in this game because I have a couple interesting questions here on how what might happen. This is, again, not on your rundown. Sorry about that. Will Warren for the Yankees, one of their top pitching prospects, 3 innings, 1 hit, 1 run, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts. Spring ERA down to 1.13 with Luis Gill on the shelf for a long time. We all kind of assumed that, okay, yeah, this now means that Marcus Stroman is a shoe-in for the fifth spot in the rotation. Is the ceiling of the rotation and I guess the floor better with Marcus Stroman or with top prospect Will Warren?
Yeah, again, take it with a grain of salt. It's spring training in a small sample size, but I think that because of what we've seen with Marcus Stroman throughout his career in the major league level over a larger sample size, I think the ceiling and floor is better with Will Warren, just because of he did what he did against the Phillies lineup, which is not something to take lightly. And he performed very well, and that lineup did include guys like future Hall of Famer Bryce Harper. So it's
1-for-3, Trey Turner, yeah. Alec Boehm, Schwarber, Real Muto. Yeah, like that was a standard lineup. Kepler, Scott, Marsh, not entirely. Stevenson was in place of Castellanos, but like, it was almost an entirely major league roster, major league lineup when he was in there.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I think that at this point the Yankees, at least for a few starts, give it to Will Warren, because we know what Marcus Stroman's not capable of, and that's being successful at the major league level, and we don't really know what Will Warren's capable of, so give him a few starts.
Yeah, he's one of those. I like Will Warren being up now that they have Max Fried, because both of these guys, I call them kitchen sink guys, the guys that throw 5 or 6 pitches. You know, Fried's got a four-seamer, that vaunted curveball. He's got a sinker. He's got a cutter. He's got a bunch of stuff. Will Warren, sinker, sweeper, four-seamer, changeup, curveball. He's throwing a bunch of pitches as well. And it just feels like it's one of those. Last year, he struggled in 5 starts at an ERA of like 10. But 136 strikeouts in the minors and 109 games in AAA. I absolutely think that if nothing else, you have some time, like you could just run with 6 starters early. Will Warren and Stroman can be up. And if Warren's bad, you send him to AAA. If Warren's good and Stroman's bad, you put Stroman in the pen, or you just DFA him and get rid of him. So I do think you need to do something like that. As a Phillies fan, do you have any concern that Zach Wheeler gave up 5 earned, 6 total runs on 8 hits in 2 innings with no walks and 2 strikeouts? You a little worried about that? Or is it just this is spring, he'll figure it out before the season starts?
It's not great, but no.
he averaged an earned run every 10 pitches, 50 yeah, pitches yeah. in the game.
Yeah, it's definitely not great, but I think it's Zach Wheeler. He's been one of, if not the best pitcher in Major League Baseball over the past few years, really throughout his tenure with the Phillies. So I think that it's more of just a spring training. He's probably working on something. He's probably working on some new pitch or something. I think he'll figure it out for the regular season, hopefully at least. Otherwise, we'll have 2 Taijuan Walkers.
It's also really funny that both of his starts came against the Yankees.
Yeah.
In spring, he went 2 innings back in the end of February, 1 hit, no runs, no walks, 4 strikeouts, faced them again a week later, and it's 8 hits, 6 runs, 5 earned, no walks, 2 strikeouts. And it's like, okay, maybe let me face somebody else, guys. Maybe don't make me face the same team twice in a row when I'm trying to get in form and work on stuff in spring. This was I'm not saying I'm worried about Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
I will point out, though, that this was a road matchup for the Yankees. And so there wasn't a lot of major league regulars in the lineup. Austin Wells led off as the catcher, went 1-for-3. Paul Goldschmidt, Jason Dominguez, that was it. Outside of that, the DH is Escara, and I don't even know what his first name is, right? Prospect George Lombard Jr. at short, prospect Spencer Jones in center. Like, it was a bunch of backups other than Austin Wells, Paul Goldschmidt, and Jason Dominguez. And so it's not saying Wheeler's going to be bad this year, but it's like, that's not the lineup you really want to struggle against, right? You feel better if it was like, yeah, Judge took him deep. Bellinger got him for a couple. Jazz got him. Like, it'd be different in that situation, right? So something to think about, something to kind of wonder about there. Real quick college news. George Mason Baseball, the Patriots, set a new NCAA record for runs scored in an inning yesterday. At the top of the third, they scored 23 runs against Holy Cross. And what's amazing here? No home runs. Oh, I'm sorry, bottom of the second. Sorry. No home runs. No triples. Only 5 doubles. They had 11 hits in the inning, but Holy Cross helped them out here. 8 walks, hit five batters with a pitch and committed three errors. After the inning opening ground out, 19 consecutive George Mason batters reach base. Is that something where you just call the game at that point? Like, hey, we're done. We're done. We're good. We don't need to keep going. Or do you actually play out the rest of the game in that situation?
Yeah, at the college level, they already have the run rule. I think that if a team's up 23-0 in the third inning and scored all of those runs in one inning, I think you can go ahead and call it. Keep those guys healthy. Let them go study some more. They might need to go study some more because baseball might not be in their future.
Oh, man. That was – oh, wow. Wow. I'm trying to pull up the play by play here to see how many batters came to the plate. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pitching change. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 pitching change. 16, 17, 18 pitching change. 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28 pitching change. 29, 30, 31 batters. Oh, my gosh. That is just insane. I mean, Auburn played Holy Cross opening weekend. It was freezing cold out. We were sitting outside, and the press box is, like, outside now. Freezing cold. They weren't good, but I don't think I've ever seen something that bad. Just that kind of collapse. The game finished 26-6. It was a seven-inning run rule, but it finished 26-6. Can you imagine having to go play five more innings of baseball after that? And here's the wildest thing to me. George Mason, 26 runs. They only had 13 hits in the game.
Yeah.
They only had 13 hits. And again, they didn't have any homers. 26 yeah. runs on 13 hits with no home runs is mind-blowing. But again, they drew 12 walks. They also had five players hit by pitches, right? Just absolutely wild. Yeah, so
they
wild.
They got on base with walks and hit by pitches more often than they did actual hits. But they also, you might have said this, I don't remember, but they also broke a record that's been standing since 1984. This record has
40
been
a 40-year-old record.
Yeah, so it's insane what happened. But, you know, that's college baseball. College baseball is fun, man, especially at the in that G5 level. It's fun. Yeah, I love college baseball. I'm glad it's back.
From a thing that we love to a thing that we don't, ESPN is getting rid of Around the Horn. Final episode's May 23rd. It's been 23 years, more than 4,900 episodes. It started in 2002. Tony Reale took over in 2004. He's been the host ever since. Kind of an institution in baseball, right? Like, or not baseball, in sports television. Like, that was my really first experience of a really quality panel show, and they could mute you if you were not, like, if you made bad points, they would just mute your mic for the rest of your little thing there. I thought it was great. Thoughts on Around the Horn going away? Good idea, bad idea, mistake, what?
Yeah, it's for me, it's just another in a long line of mistakes that ESPN is making over the last few years, for quite some time.
Dropping
now.
MLB.
Yep. And yeah, it's I don't get it. Around the Horn was great, and I loved Around the Horn. You know, after school, especially in high school, I'd get home from school and I'd throw on Around the Horn while I ate dinner before I started playing MLB the Show the rest of the night. And it was a great show. Like you said, the muting function, it was new to pretty much everything. You never saw that before anywhere. And you know, sometimes I feel like you might want to mute me whenever I'm going on a little too long, but no, Around the Horn's going to be missed. And it was a great run. 4,900 episodes is a lot. And, you know, we're only at
150.
We're getting close. We're getting close. But but yeah, I'm going to miss
22 years ago. It feels like it couldn't have been that expensive to make Around the Horn, right? Like it couldn't have been this. Like, you could have kept it if you want to cap it, like if you wanted to keep it. And this is just kind of more, it feels like more of the issue of ESPN not necessarily doing, I think, things that the fans want, right? I'm sure they didn't get the ratings that they wanted, but like, a lot of really good people came through there. Like a lot of great sports media people, Mina Kimes, Jemele Hill, Sarah Spain, just some of the women. You look at like Pablo Torre, Clinton Yates, Bill Plachke, who had some terrible opinions about for the Dodgers later on. You know, the sterile shopping mall of Truist Park for the Braves would be the big one there. So shout out to Around the Horn. We'll miss you. Okay. Division preview. National League Central still. Cincinnati Reds. They're projected by Fangraphs to finish fourth, 77-85. We have them and the Cardinals flipped. It comes to the lineup. Why? What is the main reason why we think that, I guess we'll start there, that this lineup can outperform St. Louis's lineup?
Yeah, I think the ceiling's just higher with the Cincinnati's lineup, especially with LA De La Cruz, who we talked about earlier, and they added Gavin Lux. I think he's going to do well there. Will Benson, it should, you know, if he gets a fair shake at things this year, he should be putting up some crazy power numbers. I think it was Will Benson yesterday who hit a crazy home run. It was somebody on the Reds, but I think that the ceiling for the lineup is a lot higher than the ceiling for the St. Louis Cardinals lineup, outside of Austin Hayes, of course. But
yeah, Benson went 465.
Yeah, good God.
Like all the way up the berm against, I think against Colorado. That must have been a split squad thing there, because it was, because you also saw them playing playing the Dodgers. That must have been a split squad thing. But yeah, 465 for Will Benson.
But yeah, it's just I think the ceiling as a whole for this lineup is just much, much higher. I mean, you look at the Fangraph projected lineup, and they've got Christian Encarnacion Strand on the bench as a weak side platoon bat. So I mean, that's it's a good lineup, man.
Yeah, almost everybody under the age of 30, right? Very young lineup. Jaime Candelario, which looks like a terrible signing, by the way, at first base. Moving Gavin Lux to third. He doesn't really have a great arm. I feel like the better defensive alignment is Lux at second, McClain at short, and Ellie at third. But it's something where Ellie's playing shortstop. He had a couple routine misses last year, but outside of that, he was actually really good defensively. It's not an O'Neill Cruz situation. You had to move him to the outfield. Matt McClain at second. He's played center field in his past. He played center field at UCLA. You could move him to center field. I do feel like the outfield is probably the weakness here, right?
Yeah.
You've got Will Benson. You've got TJ Friedel. You've got Austin Hayes. Let's see if Austin Hayes can kind of rebound a little bit. Spencer Steer's been playing some outfield. He's down with shoulder discomfort right now. They got rid of Jonathan India, who had been the incumbent at second base. They moved him to the Royals for Brady Singer, who we'll get to in a minute. Bringing in Jose Trevino as a veteran on the bench, as a catcher behind Tyler Stevenson, can help. This is an intriguing team. I think I agree with you. There's a lot of upside here. You just need some of these guys to pan out. And I don't love the idea of Gavin Lux's noodle arm at third. Yep. The Dodgers have absolutely shown, like with Max Muncy, like you can make a weak arm third baseman work. But it just feels like it's a weird fit, but that's the best way to do it while keeping your middle infield happy in Matt McClain and Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we also haven't mentioned yet, and I'm sure we were going to get to it, that Terry Francona is the manager there now.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah. Tito's over there now.
It's like you said, the outfield is certainly a weakness. I think that they should get somebody, maybe Jake Fraley, should kind of swap duties with Austin Hayes, because Austin Hayes does not work as an everyday baseball player. He only works as a weak side platoon guy. I've looked at the stats. They are freely and readily available for any and everyone on Baseball Reference. He cannot hit right-handed pitching. But yeah, the offense has a big upside, and they're exciting, man. They're young and exciting, and that's you know what you expect from the Reds when they're on the come up and getting good again. And baseball's better when the Reds are good, and Hunter Green deserves better.
Yeah, I think if you were to make a list of exciting most exciting young players in baseball, Ellie De La Cruz is either right above or right below Bobby Witt Jr. Like,
yep,
you want to watch both those guys play, and I think that's a great thing for them. The rotation, Hunter Green, Brady Singer, Nick Lodolo, Nick Martinez, and Andrew Abbott. They have Graham Ashcraft as the first man out. He's a long relief role and in the pen. And then in AAA, you've got some really intriguing top prospects. You've got Rhett Lauder, you've got Chase Petty, you've got Connor Phillips, Carson Spears. They drafted Chase Burns in the first round last year and brought him to camp this year. TJ Sakema. With the caveat of this ballpark sucks if you're a pitcher, right? Great American Small Park gives up a ton of home runs. With that caveat, how exciting is this rotation?
Yeah, it's pretty top heavy. I mean, you saw Hunter Green kind of have his breakout last year, and he didn't qualify for the ERA title, but he had a great season, an ERA below 3 in 150 innings, and he pitches a lot at Great American Small Park. So mm-hmm. It seems like he's figured out the park, but it's maybe Brady Singer can repeat the success he had.
Not a bad number two.
Yeah, and then of course Rhett Lauder, who FanGraphs projects to start in AAA, had an ERA below 2 at the major league level in 30 innings last year.
Very small sample size, but yeah, like he looked the part of a top prospect. I mean,
so this is a unit with a lot of upside, and it hasn't really fully tapped all of the potential that's there yet. So it's another exciting unit for this team.
Yeah, and then the bullpen. Lexis Diaz as your closer, the better of the two Diaz brothers, controversial take. And then they made some trades. They made some trades to come in behind Diaz as your setup men, right? Taylor Rogers, the lefty from the Giants, broke up him and his brother. What are we doing here? Scott Barlow from the Guardians as your righties. You have a lefty and a righty to set up. And then you've got, you know, Emilio Pagan was not great last year. He dealt with some stuff. I feel like he could be better. I like the top half of the pen. I think you have the usual questions that almost everybody has about the front of the bullpen, right? The low leverage guys, but you're back three or four being Barlow, Pagan, Rogers, Diaz. I don't hate that.
Yeah, no, not at all. It's the back of the bullpen solid. It's going to do what it needs to do to get them through the season. I mean, we have them finishing third in the National League Central, and if you're not finishing first in the National League Central, I don't think you're going to get a playoff spot. So it's not really something that they're going to have to worry about as far as the postseason goes this year. But but they can definitely work on things and see where they need to improve in that bullpen, and you know, get better for next year and try to compete for the division crown next year.
Yeah. So we got them third. Do we think that they are over 500 or not? Like where do you have them finishing the year? Over or under 500?
Honestly, I could see them getting between 84 and 86 wins with this roster that they have. As long as guys stay healthy, you know, L.A. De La Cruz continues to be L.A. De La Cruz, I think that this roster really has an opportunity to rack up 84 to 86 wins. And plus Terry Francona as the manager, you know, he should bring a lot of good veteran leadership to this young core of talent that is still yet to tap that potential. And you know, we saw what he did with the Guardians, and now he's taking his talents to the Reds, and I think that's going to be a good fit there, and they're gonna start that come up in the right side of the rebuild. And I'm gonna say 86. I said 84 to 86. I'm gonna go on the upper end. I'm gonna say 86 for the Reds.
Yeah, 86 sounds like a good number to me. I think if everything breaks right, they can be in the division race later in the year. Don't know if everything's going to break right, but yeah, I have them winning 80-something, mid-80s in victories and being in the periphery of the wild card race. They're not going to be in it, they're not going to make the postseason, but I think they can be in there. I think the ceiling of this team's probably second in the division right now, but you've got, I think a lot of that depends on your outfield. Right, your outfield's got to kind of produce more. Spencer Steer going back and left, I think, means you end up with the ability to platoon Austin Hayes and Jake Fraley or something like that. And then, you know, you need Ellie to be as awesome as we think he can be, but you need Matt McClain to get back to normal. You need just great performances from some of this. You got to figure out a leadoff spot, right? Do you put McClain? Do you put Ellie? Who do you put at leadoff? So, yeah, the ceiling is, I think, second place. I like your mid-80s projection there, so I think that's good. Come back tomorrow to find out if we think the Cubs or the Brewers are going to win the Central. I don't think we've discussed yet who's going to win, so we have to figure that out off air. In the meantime, listen on audio. Do us a favor. Leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell so you know when we drop that next episode, and maybe also leave a five-star review. Those are super awesome. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.